Good morning. Welcome. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. My name is Dave Lambert. I will be the convener this morning. Unitarian Universalism is a denomination without creed, prophet, or sacred book. We do believe in seven principles, which are very conveniently written on the back of your order of service. This morning, we will hear from three of our newer members to the fellowship, who will share the journeys that have brought them to us this morning. From these stories, you may find threads common to your own spiritual searching. Or you may have traveled other roads that have brought you to us. Regardless of the road that brings you here, please feel welcome to join us in fellowship this morning. I noticed on the calendar at Stephen and Marilyn's house the other night that today is Grandparents' Day. So if you're a grandparent, please raise your hand. If you happen to have grandparents, please raise your hand. Let's take a minute to greet all of those who are grandparents or who have grandparents, or both. Okay. I think we've greeted all of the grandparents. Welcome again. I'll take a moment now to bring your attention to the announcements in the program, but I bring your special attention to the announcement that there will be a pancake brunch following this morning's service. Kathleen was outside selling tickets. That's what all that was about, so we hope that you can all join us afterwards for pancakes. In Unitarian Universalist fellowships around the world, we begin our services by lighting this chalice that lays before me. This light shines upon the good works that every one of you do. You are the light of the world, and the chalice represents this light. We do not hide this light, but instead we let its glow shine on all that you do and all of your good services. Please join in singing, standing if you care, of hymn number 212, We Are Dancing Sarah's Circle.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is the time of our service when we express, or not, our joys and concerns that are important to our daily lives. I do have the microphone. I'm going to take the first prerogative, and one joy we have is Wednesday is Sybil's birthday. So please. Hey, others.
This is a Les Frazier. This is a non-political announcement. We've changed the free coffee at Metal Arc to a men and women's coffee Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock in the main building. And Sidney Carlin, legislator, will talk on improving society. Tom Hawk will talk on saving our democracy. We'll have a Metal Arc Hills update. Dr. Arbiter Wright will talk, we'll talk on upcoming election. And everybody's invited, but you need reservations.
Okay, thank you. Others?
Sam Lacy, and I wanted to introduce my brother, R.J., as he's visiting this week from North Carolina, originally from Maine.
Oh. Welcome.
Dick Cattell and Judy. We have the special pleasure of visiting our daughter for a week, the first time we've seen her in person since her diagnosis of leukemia. Mm-hmm. And it was so reassuring to see that when her red cells and blood white cells are at the proper level, she's got all the energy she had before this happened. And so it's going well.
Good.
Thanks.
Matt Campbell. Have a joy and a little bit of a concern. My wife, Jen, is pregnant, so we're expecting her for first child.
Amber Venom, today my husband was born 33 years ago. That's a joy for me. I'm glad he was born.
We celebrated a beautiful circle dinner at Marilyn and Steve's Friday night. We even had violin music while we had our wonderful dinner. If you get an opportunity, try to go to one. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Molly McGoy. I just have a joy that we signed Nick up for a running club, and if anybody knows Pat Malgaris here in town, I think he's an extension agent and does all kinds of runs and things like that, but he's just fantastic with the kids, and he's got the best volunteers, and it just warms my heart to see fantastic college students with 100 kids running all around a green field and just having a blast. And it's not about competition, it's about exercise, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience a couple times a week to see that. And so I just really appreciate that it's available in Manhattan.
Well, thanks to all of you who shared your joys and concerns, and for those unspoken joys and concerns living within each of your hearts. Sandy Nelson will now lead the children in a children's story with a very interesting title of a book.
I have a joy.
Oh, well, go ahead.
I have a joy that I just saw Olivia Reagan. Oh, no, Olivia Banner Reagan, Reagan Banner, and Julia and their mom Emily here today.
Thank you. Dave said we were going to talk about this book, but we're really not. This summer, all of us kids have been doing some personal travels through the help of many adults here in this room. And we went to lots of pretend places and were introduced to lots of new ideas and new things. Anybody can tell the group one of the places we went on our pretend travels here at the church? Okay, Jake. Jake, what's your last name?
Today.
What's your last name today? Jake Joe Blow. And how old are you, Jake Joe Blow? No, you're... Oh, are you Jake Larson? Yeah, and how old are you, Jake Larson? Maybe three? Maybe? Okay, where'd we go? Five today. Okay, works for me. Can I hand Lily the microphone and you can tell us quickly one place that we went?
You know what? Spider-Man can climb, and I can almost climb walls, but I can't climb yet.
Did we go to Tom and Martha's house?
What?
And Spider-Man can climb walls, and maybe he can climb a pyramid, and we went to Egypt this summer. You're right. That's great. Connor, say your name. And
I'm Connor. I am 8, and I'm in the 4th grade. One of the places we went was London.
London, okay. Anybody else? Leah? Did you go someplace this summer, too?
I go to the store and Spider-Man got the walls.
Man, that Spider-Man got around this summer. Lily, how about you? Say your name and how old you are and what age.
I'm Lily Colburn. I'm 12 and in the 7th grade, and we went to the community garden.
Anybody else want to?
We did the Olympics.
The Olympics. Yeah, we did. Okay, so we went to lots of places this summer, pretend places. Some of the other places we went, some real places, were Tom and Monta's house and their whole homestead. Do you guys, anybody remember that one? And we went to lots of places. It was a lot of fun. We did lots of personal journeys. Today, the adults are going to talk about their own spiritual journeys and how they came to this place. Does anybody know? Show your hands if you know what the name of this place is. Yeah, can you tell us the whole name?
The University.
Pretty good. Well, how about we let Olivia tell us?
The Unitarian Universalist Church of Manhattan.
That's good, too. Yes, Connor?
Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan.
So we have a church that's a fellowship, and there's university people here. And others. How is it that you all have come to this place today? Was it a spiritual journey that brought you here, perhaps? Or something else?
My mom took me here.
Lily's mom brought her. Anybody else? How did you come today?
First day I came here was because my mom had been coming here for a really long time, so I just came since I was 2.
Anybody else want to say? You want to tell us about how Spider-Man got here?
Okay, we can talk later. Okay.
You know why my mommy brained here? Because today was a school day. Fellowship was a fellowship. Today is a fellowship day.
And that's really important to all the people that are here. They're all here for fellowship. And they have come, and they're going to talk about how they got here and why they got here to this Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. So we today are going to go back to our classes and be introduced to new, exciting things that talk about Unitarian Universalism, which this book says is a really long name, and there's a lot of things in here that talk about the seven principles of this church. And anybody can tell me one or two of the seven principles?
When I go to my school, I just play a lot, and I would play with cool toys I kind of play with Spider-Man, and I dislike Spider-Man.
And because each person is important, those things are real important to you.
Everybody's fair, no matter what religion you are, black or white. It's no matter who you are, what you do, everybody's fair.
That's right. So I'm going to read the seven principles with kids' version, and we'll go on our own spiritual journey, and we'll let the adults do their spiritual journeys here, okay? If you guys know these, you can maybe sing along. Or not. I don't know the tune, sorry. Each person is important. Be kind in all you do. We're free to learn together and search for what is true. All people need a voice. Build a fair and peaceful world. And we care for Earth's lifeboat. Which is a weird one for me, but just doesn't rhyme. Okay. So that's it. Shall we go explore and do our own adventures?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Sandy. Before I introduce this morning's speaker for the offertory portion of our service, the musical surprise has been resolved. It's written as if it were planned, but it actually wasn't planned. I couldn't find any music as of the printing of the order of service. But the music this morning after the speaker will be Jennifer Bryan and Stephen Moll playing a Scott Joplin tune called Solace. So, but before we hear the music, Penny Pierce from Sunflower Casa will be our helping hand speaker for the morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I've seen a few familiar faces, so it's nice to always come and be welcome. And thank you so much to Drew for contacting me. We're always so thankful for anybody who contacts us and wants to support a nonprofit. My name is Penny Pierce. I work for Sunflower Casa, a local nonprofit that serves abused and neglected children going through the court system through no fault of their own. They suffer from abuse, neglect, poverty, you name it. If they go through the court system, then a lot of times they'll get a CASA appointed to them, and CASA is Court Appointed Special Advocate, is the acronym. We serve children in Pottawatomie, Clay, and Riley counties. We have a couple big events coming up. We have a CASA Comedy Club coming up on September 21st, which is really fun. We're having three comedians come in. We do various fundraising activities throughout the year. We also have training starting this Monday night. It's every Monday for 6 weeks if anybody would like to be a court-appointed special advocate. Basically, you get paired with a child, and then you meet with them once a week or however often you can, kind of form a bond with them. And without the advocate, it would just be an attorney representing a child. And generally, children don't feel as connected if they don't get to meet with someone, if they don't form a bond on a personal level. So that's what the CASAs do. So our training is starting this Monday night, 6 p.m. It goes for 6 weeks. It's every Monday night at 6 p.m. at the First Lutheran Church, 930 points. We really are looking for male volunteers, too, and also people who are willing to serve children going through the court system in Pottawatomie, through the Pottawatomie County Courts. We would love to have anybody volunteer, or even if they don't become an advocate, just volunteer with any events. You can always contact me. But thank you so much for inviting me to your church today, and God bless. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you.
you, Jennifer and Stephen. The following is a paraphrase of words written by Forrest Church, long-term minister of the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church of New York City. Imagine awakening from a deep sleep one morning in the nave of a great cathedral. Like a newborn child, you open your eyes unto a world unseen before. It is a world of light and dancing shadow, stone and glass, life and death. Welcome to the cathedral of the world. Look at the windows, windows beyond number. Some windows are long, long forgotten. Others are revered by millions, the most sacred of shrines. Each window tells a story about the creation of the world, the meaning of history, the purpose of life, the nature of humankind, the mystery of death. The windows of the cathedral are where the light shines through. But the windows are not the light. They are where the light shines through. We shall never see the light directly, only as refracted through the windows of the cathedral. This morning, new fellowship members Esther Kuhn, Drew Venom, and Matt Campbell will share their experiences of awakening in this vast cathedral. All three will share their views of the light refracted through the windows, these windows beyond number. Esther is first.
Hi, I'm Esther Simmons. You'll have to excuse me. The last time I spoke in front of a church, it was communion, and I had to give a forced confession. That was about 6 years ago, so I'm a bit out of practice. As some of you know, I was raised in a Mennonite community. The Mennonite environment was very controlling. We weren't allowed to talk to people outside of our church affiliation. It was worse if you were a woman. There were only a few jobs we were allowed to keep. They mainly consisted of working in a bakery, at the church store, or teaching. When we turned 19, we were expected to find a man the church approved of, marry him, and raise kids. If we were unable to find someone to marry, it was assumed that we had in some way sinned or that something else was really wrong with us that made us undesirable. Most of the girls who didn't marry became teachers within the closed community. I knew from a very early age that I wanted more in life than being a married baby-making machine. The problem was I didn't know what, since the church didn't allow an access to an education past eighth grade. Thankfully, my mother also homeschooled us, which later enabled me to begin college ed courses with my peers who went through public school. At this point, I was 14 years old and had just finished the church's eighth grade curriculum, so I got a job at a bakery, which was owned by church members. I learned all the right things to say and how to cover my true feelings. I knew I wasn't happy, I just didn't know why. When I turned 16, the church sent out a proposal to kick my family out. This happened because my dad asked questions about the inconsistencies he saw, and they were unable to justify logically. So they took a vote, and although the majority voted for us to stay, we didn't have an option because the conditions of the proposal was that whoever voted for us was also asked to leave. Because of this, the church lost over half of its members. So here I was, removed from the only life I knew, wondering what I was going to do. My identity was wrapped into who the church wanted me to be, what they wanted me to say, and how they wanted me to dress. The only friends I had were lost due to the shunning. I had no skills, and at this point, it was too late for me to start high school. I discovered that this entire time, I was living a life that wasn't my own. The knowledge of not knowing who I was sent me spiraling into a deep depression. I stopped talking to almost everyone, including some of my family, and spent a lot of time thinking about the best way to end my life. This depression went on for a couple years. During this time, there were some friends who really helped me. One of them was my friend Audrey. I would spend my summers with her, And the last summer I stayed with her, she took me to the store, helped me figure out what size I was, and helped me pick out my first pair of blue jeans. Before this summer, I had never heard of mascara or foundation, so she taught me what makeup was and how to apply it. After I got home, I started wearing jeans and makeup around the house. At this point, we hadn't fully made the transition from Mennonites to normal people, so I had a conversation with my parents about my new attire. Mom liked Audrey's makeup teaching job, so she told me as long as I never looked like a clown, she was okay with it. My brother, Mike, was another person who helped me. He had joined the local fire department and thought it was great. He talked about it all the time and would try to get me to go on calls with him to watch or go to a meeting with him. I told him no for a while, mostly because I was scared and had built so many walls around me that I didn't want to meet new people, and also because I just don't like to be told what to do. Well, finally, one Monday, I couldn't find anything better to do, and I couldn't come up with a good excuse not to go, so I went with him. After I talked to the chief and some of the other firefighters, I thought that this was something I might be able to enjoy. Becoming a firefighter was what really opened my shell. Going out on car accidents and fires and pumping water out of someone's basement felt amazing because I knew that everything I did made a small difference in someone's life. It was during this time that I started healing, and I felt able to face some of the other things that had happened. I finally sat down with my dad and asked him why on earth he thought joining the Mennonites was a good idea. He explained that at the time that we had left Detroit, there were many shootings in our neighborhood, and he observed his friends' kids as they grew up and watched many of them become addicted to drugs, and he wanted a better life for us. From the outside, the Mennonites looked like a safe place. The decision to join the community was one that Mom and Dad had spent a lot of time considering. We spent time in different communities, including an Amish one, before we finally settled in West Virginia. Being able to understand his reasonings was another step in the healing process. Skipping forward from then to now, there has been some hard but good changes. One was finding and marrying Stephen and moving to Kansas. Another was agreeing to come here to the UU, which made me realize that I still had to face the issue of attending a church-like setting again. Although for the first few months, it was hard for me to get over the fact that I was, once again, attending a church, it has been rewarding for me to attend here and listen to ideas from different perspectives, even if I don't always agree. Being in an environment that fosters new ideas rather than suppressing them has been healing for me. Thank you for listening and being a part of my journey.
So all journeys are different, and not surprisingly, mine was different than Esther's. My spiritual journey really started, I would say, from nowhere. It wasn't from like a place or from a rejection of a certain point of view. It was really from nowhere. In my family, my mom was a lapsed Catholic. She picked up the guilt, and so she felt bad about not going, and every once in a while she got it in her head to go to Mass, but really not much connection with religion at all. My dad's side of the family had a strong religious tradition. My grandfather on that side is an ordained minister, got his Master's of Divinity. My dad's oldest brother is also an ordained minister, and they were Baptist. But when my dad went to church or church functions and heard their values and heard that they don't believe in drinking and gambling, and then saw prominent members of the church doing exactly those things, he couldn't take the hypocrisy. And rather than attributing that to those people, he kind of threw everything out. So he was just really cynical and jaded about religion as a whole. In my family growing up, we celebrated Christmas trees and presents and songs. We got dressed up on Easter to go to my grandparents' house, because that's what you're supposed to do. But there really wasn't a connection. There wasn't much of an experience at all with religion, and there certainly wasn't any positive experience with religion. It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't intentionally chosen. It was a lack. It was starting kind of from nothing. So as a result of growing up in that environment, in both spiritual sense and just in general, I grew up pretty feeling cut off from my own experiences of the world. So that did change. I'm here. It started, I could say, in college. I was really interested in religion. I took a lot of classes about it. I took a really interesting class comparing the four Gospels in the New Testament. But at that point, it was still really an academic connection. I didn't really have any emotion behind it. And I'd never considered attending a church, because why would I? until through relationship with my wife, Amber, when she was growing up, she had some really great experiences through being a member of a church. She had some really awful ones, too. But some really great ones. So we were open to the idea. We wanted to find a place, but we weren't quite sure how to find a place that had those good experiences and hopefully not have to take the bad ones with it. So I don't actually remember exactly how I first heard of Unitarian Universalism. It's really funny. I tell this story to Amber that I'm like, yeah, I think that I had like a friend that I went to church with once. Or maybe they told me about it and then I thought of it, and she pretty much assures me that didn't happen. It would have had to have happened before we got together, and it didn't. And so somewhere I just made that up. But I think what it probably really was I had a 40-minute commute when we lived in Houston, and somehow I heard about public radio, and the local UU churches supported public radio, so I heard their little spot. And that was enough, like hearing about like some of the seven principles that they talked about was enough to make us interested, and we looked it up online, and that was really nice, because once we started reading about Unitarian Universalism and the seven principles, we were both like, oh, that's what we are. We just didn't know. So we've actually been to at least four different churches over the time, Unitarian churches over the time that since we found out about it. The first one we went to was in the little suburb that we lived in southeast of Houston, and they were very energetic. But when we went to that church, they really overdid it on the welcome. We were just like at the stage of like kind of dipping our toe in and trying to see, hey, what's this about? And it kind of felt like they grabbed a hold and wanted to pull us under. So they were really scary, actually. It almost felt like a cult, because it's like, one of us, be one of us. So that was a little bit too much. But Houston's big, and so there were other options. And there was a Unitarian church right next to Rice University, where we went to school, and so we decided to drive up there and check it out. And that church was like a breath of fresh air. It was really diverse. It felt really vibrant. It felt really connected to the community. And it felt welcoming without being overbearing. So we lived a long way away. We were young adults and didn't know exactly what we were doing or how to spend our time or what we wanted to do. But we went sometimes. And even when we didn't go, we always knew it was there if we needed it, and that was really important. It was like we had a home, but didn't have to visit it that often. So we moved, and we moved to Tallahassee, Florida, for Amber to get her PhD. And when we went to the church there, it was, in a lot of ways, it was the opposite of the one in Houston. It felt very insular. It didn't feel like it was tied into the community. The vast majority of the members were between 40 and 60 years old, and I love people between 40 and 60 years old. There's nothing wrong with that, but there weren't that many people that we felt a connection with. So we probably went twice and then never went again. And then that brings us here. So I don't know how often people who are already Unitarian Universalists move to Manhattan, Kansas, but I know it does happen. There are at least two of us. So that's good. And we decided before we came here that we were going to jump in with both feet and participate. And we've been much more connected to this church. I feel much more connected to this church, this fellowship, than I have in any other. It's been a really huge part of us coming to Manhattan and feeling really connected to the community and feeling home incredibly quickly. We've been here less than 15 months, but this place feels more like home than anywhere I've lived in my adult life, which is really wonderful. I don't know how long we're going to be here. I would say for the foreseeable future right now, but that's not really easy to predict. It's hard to foresee, but whether it's 5 years or 10 years or 50 years, home to us is more about people, the people that we're with. Anywhere that I'm with Amber is home, but then it's also a wider feeling than that. So it doesn't have to be a permanent place. For us, this is a spiritual home.
I'm Matt Campbell. I find it really fun that people can come from different backgrounds and get along and share their lives with each other. It's just a great thing. And that's kind of, so I'll share my story to add to theirs. It all began 13.7 billion years ago. Energy became matter, and matter became stars, and stars became planets. On one of those planets, the matter formed living organisms, and after a rigorous selection process, I stand here today. A fairly advanced form of matter. I like to think, at least. It's amazing that we are here, and it's amazing that we know so much about our universe. But it is far more amazing what we do not know. At the age of 7, this was scary. One night I was not able to sleep. And my father asked, "What's wrong?" I said, "Dad, I'm scared of space." He looked at me, puzzled. "What's wrong?" Or he looked at me puzzled and said, "What do you mean you're scared of space?" He, of course, thought I meant space as in the spaces in this room. But I explained to him, "I'm scared of outer space because I could not comprehend the vastness and amazement of the universe at that age." And there it is, the birth of religion, in my opinion, humans' attempt to explain amazing things. My fear of space, what does this have to do with my journey? It's strange to look at fear as a value, but I think it is. We probably wouldn't be here today if our ancestors didn't value fear at least a little. In the early years of my life, I think I valued fear a little too heavily. I'm not sure how much of this was nature and how much was nurture, but as we all are, I was taught to fear things, and for me, this included God. The term "fear God" was actually a catchphrase among the youth groups in the Baptist church when I was young. And by golly, by the time I was 12, I was so scared of God, I decided to get baptized. And so a curious, doubtful, and contemplative, and scared boy was born again. Although it's not quite the way the Baptist intended. The act of being baptized was actually rather traumatizing. The tub was high up above the congregation and was made of glass so they could see you be dunked by the pastor. I stepped into the water, professed my intention, and by the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, was submerged and cleaned of my prior and future sins. I was going to heaven. I had a huge, overwhelming sense of, well, not much. It didn't feel like much of anything, and that shocked me. I did feel joy afterwards, but the joy I felt was more of relief from pressure to accept Christ. Although it was applied lightly and suggestively, the pressure was rather heavy. And joy from the relief that I would avoid hell and go to heaven. And when you're 12, that's pretty important. I really did feel saved. After all, I was 12. And pressure relief during middle school is salvation. This was the peak of my Christian journey at 12 years old. Ever since, my path has led in another direction. My real journey was just beginning. It was a slow journey. I tried to have a faithful life. I tried prayer. I tried to live religiously. I attended church 3 times a week, went on 7 mission trips, went to youth camps and countless worship services. It never felt right. Sometimes I thought something was wrong with me when I compared myself to the others. I doubted and asked questions, but straying was scary. If eternal damnation is not scary, I don't know what is. Luckily, my curiosity and doubt began to take charge, and I began to contemplate. Throughout college, I thought about religion and spirituality often, but I did not actively participate in any organized religion. I did doubt, though, and began to develop my own belief system. I did have to persevere through some Baptist services. When I would return home, I would join my family at the Baptist church I grew up attending, where my family has deep ties, one time with a sinful hangover. But going back always confirmed the Baptist church was not the place for me, and that I disagreed with the Christian dogma in its entirety. It was scary to disown the very things I grew up with and reject the promise of heaven, especially with the eternal damnation at stake. But I had no choice. I could not continue to believe something I didn't. And I had an ace in my pocket. If I was wrong, I had the Christian base covered. I learned that fear, although useful in a survival sense, can lead to rather odd conclusions. And at its worst, can be vicious, destructive trap. So I decided that being scared was no longer an option. And after all, a curious, doubtful, and contemplative young man, without being scared, is not a Baptist for long. This brings me to change. It was time for a good dose of it. After graduating from college, the real world came charging ahead. New job, newly married, new house, and new responsibility. I believe these transient times are critical. It's a point in life when your direction is vulnerable and primed for change, second only to the day when you leave your parents' home. I'm not saying that things always change at these points, nor am I saying that change can't be made at other times, just that these transient times in life are when change in a direction is natural. Knowing this, I wanted to make the most of it. I wanted to make positive changes. I wanted to improve. So I began to search. I asked, what do I need to live life to the fullest? And on top of that list was community. I also asked, what do I believe? And I would think to myself, I'm not sure, but not that religious stuff. I wanted something that was not status quo, something that was not judgmental, something that was different. But I didn't know exactly what I wanted. After struggling for a while to find a sense of community and struggling to land on a set of beliefs, I decided to do what I do whenever I need to figure something out. I turned to Google, and there was UUFM, and here I am. Shedding the Christian dogma has unbridled my natural analytical and logical mind. The outlook on the world really changes when the weight of dogma is lifted. I am now able to draw my own conclusions. I am now able to think freely. I am now able to flourish. I once thought it was scary to not believe. Now it is scary to think I was ever there, and I still could be. At the UUFM, I found not just a community, but a place where I feel myself, a place I feel I am comfortable, a place that enlightens me, a place that is challenging, and a place that is right. I have found friends and role models, helpers and thinkers, wonderful people to share my life, and people gracious enough to listen to my story. I recently coined a saying you may have heard me say before: I came to the UUFM for what it wasn't, but I stayed for what it is. So let my journey continue. I guess if anybody has questions, I guess we'll take them as a group or directed questions too. So. I guess I'll stay up here.
Yeah. So as Matt said, if you have questions or comments on the great presentations we just had from Esther, Matt, or Drew, please ask them. Or if you'd like to share some of your own personal journeys, please do.
I'd like to know what you put in the Google line that brought up UUFM.
Interesting. It probably wasn't a straight shot, because it was probably, I probably was looking for a religious group and didn't know what I was looking for when I started. So it's, I don't know what I put in there, But I like Drew. You find those principles, and the fact that there's no dogma and this is something different was the hook, I guess. So does that answer your question? Yeah. So thanks to Dan Swenson for putting this website up.
Well, that was amazing. I'm really touched by all three of you. I have to tell you each individually, too. It was a very touching, a very moving presentation by each of you. And for Drew, I'd like to say that you discovered that each UU group is very different. And my husband and I both grew up as Unitarians, but I also had Congregational and Presbyterian stints in between. But my family went to several different Unitarian groups, and I went to the ones Dick's family went to. And that's one thing I like about Unitarians, that they are rather autonomous. I'm glad you were able to find something. And Esther just blew my mind. I always knew there's something special about you. Each one of you is really special. Thank you so much.
Marilyn Caldwell, I agree. Each one of you really gave wonderful stories, and I'm always surprised at where our membership comes from. But the other thing is a more general question. When were the seven principles proposed for the UUs? Because when I became a UU, which was back in the 60s, they didn't have those seven principles. So I came of, I don't remember them at all until I got here. But that is how people find this church. When I belonged, it was what we didn't believe that brought us all together. It was people who didn't believe what the Methodists or the Catholics or the Baptists. And so we came together in the lack of belief. So I'm kind of glad that the Unitarians finally came together on something positive.
I agree that it's very important to not only come together for what you don't believe, but to come together and to believe in something.
To believe so. And we all know that Google is God.
I don't know about the first six, but I remember reading a story that the seventh one was proposed and accepted sometime in the late 70s or early 80s. So apparently it used to be the six principles.
Seven's a better number.
It is. More religious significance.
Yeah.
The event that you referred to about baptism at 12, when I was 12, I did not join the class to become a member of Centenary Methodist Church in Beatrice, Nebraska. And a couple of days after the first meeting, the minister, Dr. Alva Clark, showed up, kind of a stuffy guy anyway, showed up at our house and wanted to know why I wasn't there and wanted to know from my parents why they had not seen to it that I was there. And so the everybody was looked at me and I said, well, last year when the membership class joined, everybody swore to be that they would forever be loyal to the Methodist Church. And I must have been precocious or something because I thought, well, what if I married a Presbyterian? Could I switch or not? And so I said that I just couldn't see making that kind of promise. And the minister said, well, of course, it doesn't mean it, you know. I said, well, then why make the promise or something smart, you know, 12. I didn't get this way overnight. But then the minister turned to my dad and indicated to him that it was his responsibility to get me there. And that was a big mistake because, you know, I thought of it, well, my dad is standing up for me, but I think he was really standing up for himself, but I was very proud of him because he said, well, if Michael has decided he doesn't want to go, then that ends the conversation. And this was a minister who was not used to being challenged, that's right, the word, and but I never did join.
I just need to second Sylvia's comments. I can't thank you enough for sharing your journeys. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful way to get to know you better, but it's also kind of reaffirms how wonderful, you know, this place is. So thank you so much. All three of you and your spouses have just been fabulous. We're so glad you're here.
I'm Kathy Hedge, thank you very much for what you had to say. And something that really, a thread that went through that I find very impressive is there are so many places, so many opportunities in our culture to just say, fine, I'll just take this path that's already set out for me. I can just fall into that, and then I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to think about it, and everybody in that group will say, you're just fine, you're just perfect. We have the right path right here. Stop thinking, stop worrying. And I think it's really exciting that all of you and your spouses have all said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep worrying, even though it's not quite as comfortable. And that's really, I think, what invigorates all of us and gives us hope that, you know, our country really isn't all falling to rack and ruin.
Anna Franklin, and I want to again say thank you all. It's really wonderful to hear your stories. I think that, you know, everybody's talking about the events when they were 12 years old, so I remember back to living in Herndon, Virginia, which was the first place I had lived in inside the United States. I had never lived in this country. And I came here there at the age of 9. And my father said, we're living in a small southern town now, and we have to join a church. We had never been to church before. So he tested out the different churches and found one that was really nice. It was the Presbyterian Church, and he really liked the minister, and he liked his sermon. And so he said, okay, we're going to join that church. We have to be with a church. We can't not be going to church in this town in 1950, whatever it was. And so we did, and I ended up singing in the choir because they were missing out on altos, and so I sang in the adult choir. But what I remember was that when I was 12 years old, I took I got confirmed in the Presbyterian Church. And with a white dress and the whole bit. And I had to do catechism for like weeks before that and all that stuff. And I thought, what is this all about? Because I hadn't grown up with anything like that. But I just said, okay, well, this is what's happening now. And then when we left shortly thereafter, I went to church. I lived with my aunt and I went to church with her at an Episcopal church. And then when I went to high school, I went to church because I was in a boarding school and everybody went to church. But I never really thought about whether I wanted to be going to church or not going to church. And the thing I love about this place is that we are free to really accept the truth on the basic level, and that truth for a lot of us is that we just don't know. And we can say, I don't know, and it's okay. So that's the freedom that I really cherish.
I wanted to thank all three of you for entertaining and moving talks, and I also had the same experience where I found this as a home, and I've gone for 20 years. First time was invited to play the violin at one in Dallas, and they've all been great, but this is the one I found to be kind of a home. So I kind of, and also the first place I was, of those places I was asked to speak, so it's really special that you all spoke today.
It's really heartwarming to listen to everybody in here, but it's just confirmed what I've always said, you nonconformists are all alike.
I want to thank Drew for your comments about being welcomed at different Unitarian churches, and we all need to learn from that, I think. It's difficult to find that right thing, and I enjoyed last Sunday seeing you talk to some new people. I know my son and daughter-in-law were looking for a church in the Washington, D.C. area, and they went to one, and before they got away, they had been asked to teach Sunday school, so, you know, and they got away. So we need to work at that, though. I think there is a good way. Thank you.
I couldn't resist. I have to add my 12-year-old story. Just perfect opening. So my group, 12 or 13, early 60s, getting confirmed. And one of the things that the Catholic Church did is they sent out a bishop's, a devil's advocate, the bishop's representative who came to quiz us to make sure we'd learn our catechism okay. Well, I was in what they call the bad class of my school, because we had a bunch of rebels in there, and I mean, I had to really work hard to get, if I had any grade that was as good as Hermann von Ratz's, I was very proud. You know, we really had about six of us in there who probably would have been, you know, in the gifted program, but we were just really always questioning. So anyway, this is the height of the Cold War, right? And so the bishop's advocate asks us all, he says, okay, let's say there's a man in Russia, or Soviet Union, he's led a very good life, is very kind, gives to his neighbors, good to his family. He really is a very, very good, warm-hearted person, really works hard not to ever hurt anyone. But he's not baptized. He doesn't believe in Christ. Can he go to heaven? And, of course, we all said, well, sure. And when he told us, well, no, he can't because he's not baptized. Well, of course, that was the wrong thing to say to this class because we all just, what? That's just not fair. And we could see Sister's face turning the color of Esther's shirt. I mean, and there wasn't anything we could do. So we kind of, you know, we could tell he was really angry with us, and he kept casting glances at our teacher, not our principal, but our teacher, like, you haven't trained these kids right. And she's sort of like, what do I do, you know? And so we, up until the time that the bishop came, we weren't sure that he was going to confirm us because we were radicals. And I really wish I had contact with all of those children because I bet most of them became Unitarians.
Thank you, Esther and Drew and Matt, and all of you who shared your stories of your journeys to this place this morning. Our closing hymn will be hymn number 311, first verse only, in order to save time. Let It Be a Dance.
Song be heard, play the music, sing.
As you leave this morning, once again consumed by your busy lives, recall this wondrous light that shines upon the outside of our cathedral. Seek this light through as many windows as you possibly can. And as you seek, remember to let it be a dance. And preferably a dance with pancakes. Please join us.